You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, David Goss and Matt Doyle out in San Francisco. This is an extra special episode. This is a travel episode. This is when you probably sitting in coach, if you're like me, and maybe hopefully not the middle seat on the way to see your in-laws, or maybe driving in the car to go see family or friends. That's when you listen to this. We hope. Happy Thanksgiving. It's a very special episode about the Chicago Fire with Chicago Fire GM Nelson Rodriguez. Matt, how's it going out there on the West Coast, or maybe not the West Coast? I hear rumors that you're elsewhere today.
Well, I'm still on the West Coast. I drove 8 hours south, so I'm in Orange County, sitting underneath a lemon tree, sipping a fruity drink, enjoying a California, truly California Thanksgiving.
Truly effortless, the way that you troll us East Coasters with your West Coast status. Dave, I'm just going to confirm that you're alive here. You're saving your pipes for a big Thanksgiving show.
I'm feeling a little bit under the weather. It's one of those things where you get a little bit sick and then you like play 2 hours of soccer in the freezing cold in Manhattan and then go out and see friends after.
I'm telling you, Gas Man, this is a good sound for you.
Yeah.
I think you should sing us into the next segment. Can't get enough of your love, baby. Some real soulful stuff.
I don't know if I can sing it right
now. Yeah, he might croak. I mean, if Simon Borg was in here, he would have like rappelled up the wall and be as far away from as possible.
It's just allergies, guys.
My immune system, I hope, will be able to fight off the Goss sickness here. But as I said, this is a special show all about the Chicago Fire. We have a very wide-ranging interview with Nelson Rodriguez coming right up. Before we get to that, the news, the reason why we're focused on CF97 as it was, that's because they hired a head coach, Veljko Paunović. You might remember that name from a couple different places. First of all, he played for the Philadelphia Union a few years back. Didn't play a ton, more of a role player guy at the end of his career, but a La Liga veteran, has played all over the world, Germany, different parts, a Serbian. You may know him because of that, because he coached the Serbian U-20s this summer in the World Cup, a tournament which they won in the process knocking out the U.S. But he's a young coach. He's a recently retired coach, 38, 39, I believe. This will be his first head coaching opportunity at the club level. In some ways, this is a big risk. In other ways, it goes right in line, Matt, with what many of the other owners in Major League Soccer have been doing, which is going to recently retired players with MLS experiences. Your first impressions on this hire, Veljko Paunović for the Chicago Fire?
I love it. Look, like you said, there is a risk, and any time you're giving a guy his first job managing a club team, that's the risk. But if you look at what he did with the Serbian U-20s, it's really impressive. Look, we always hear foreign managers don't do well in MLS, but it's not really – saying that isn't really accurate. It's managers with no previous U.S. or Canadian soccer experience tend not to do well in the U.S., in MLS. Guys like Carl Robinson, Oscar Pereja, Steve Nichol, these guys are foreign, but they came and they understood the culture and they understood what MLS locker rooms were like before going on to manage successfully. And I think that is the mold that Paunović is from, is cut out of, even though he doesn't have quite the same amount of experience. But this is a guy, based on how Serbia played, I think he has a good chance of fixing a lot of the things that are wrong with the Fire.
A good young core here for the Chicago Fire, the likes of Harry Shipp, Matt Polster, Gilberto coming in last year after that stint with TFC and then being a little bit out in the MLS wilderness, so to speak. Jovan Jones, I really like as a left back, David Akam. The core is good, but you mentioned the U-20 experience. That would lead folks to believe that perhaps he'll have a big effect on the academy, on perhaps a USL team being in Chicago in the future. We'll talk to Nelson Rodriguez about a few of those things coming up. But how do you marry that idea there of first team and academy and of player development, Matt? Because that seems like the next step for successful franchise in this league, especially as it comes to sustainability and the way that roster rules work.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, I think you know pretty well that I'm a huge proponent of building through the academy and USL, and I think you actually wrote the definitive piece on that last year in September 2014 when we did 24 under 24 about LA's strategy, both short and long term. And you look at what they've been able to do with guys like Jossy Zardes and Jose Villarreal and a few others that they've brought through the ranks. And that's the model for Chicago. Like, and they have to get it done sooner rather than later because they have so much young talent and they've never been given the platform that they need to grow into their professionalism, so to speak.
I think one of the keys when we talk about that is, of course, having a head coach willing to play young players. That really is the key. I mean, you can have the USL team, but if you never give those guys opportunity, if you never make them feel connected, it's just a waste of money. When I see this hiring and I think about his background, and I went back and read some interviews with Elko back in 2012 and 13, I believe, you know, when he's entering MLS, when he's thinking about entering MLS, when he's talking about his future, because remember, he was at the end of his career. He said at that time, look, I've done my FIFA Pro. I'm looking to be a head coach. That's what I want to do. It seems like he dropped in on MLS and he said, hey, I'll get a little bit of a taste here. Maybe create another wrinkle in my playing experience that applies to my coaching experience. And now that's really become very large. I wonder if I'm looking for a parallel, or maybe if I'm a Chicago Fire fan, I should say, looking for a hopeful parallel, I look toward Oscar Pareja. And the other point on Oscar Pareja, though, in FC Dallas is they don't yet have a USL pro team. USL team. I'm still living in 2014. they don't have that team, but they do have a head coach that's been willing to take chances. Moving on from the young talent that's not yet there, because that's a long-term thing. We know that takes years to build that pipeline. When you look at their core and Paunovic comes in, where should he be looking for players? Where is he strong squad-wise, and where do they need to improve a little bit?
I actually like the left side of that team with Jovan Jones and David Akam. I like what they have to offer in central midfield, and I like Gilberto a lot. He's not going to win the Golden Boot, but he's not a luxury player. You know, he gives you such an honest defensive effort that you can afford to have maybe a less committed defensive presence behind him. The obvious question, Chicago are in central defense and right back. I think they have some guys who can get better, but I think they clearly lack a Matt Hedges level player or a Kendall Waston or a Laurent Simon level player. Guys who not only are locked down defenders physically and mentally, but guys who also know how to organize the line and keep the back line connected to the midfield. Chicago was really bad at that last year, and I think that's job one. No matter what happens, no matter who they acquire this offseason, getting that right is job one for Veljko Paunovic.
Now, Chicago Fire, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, I think they had the worst record in MLS last season in 2015. That means they have the number one overall draft pick in the Super Draft in January. We'll have to see what they do there. Of course, you look back at those and some of the teams that are now fighting for playoff positions, Matt Hedges came via the Super Draft and was not a number one overall pick. So some questions about who will make those picks, of course, some questions about what the philosophy is going forward. The man to answer those questions is Chicago Fire General Manager Nelson Rodriguez. Nelson, how's it going?
Fantastic, guys. I appreciate a few minutes of your time. Thanks for inviting me.
No doubt. A happy Thanksgiving. First of all, we're going to put this out tonight on Wednesday. There'll be some Thanksgiving travelers maybe heading to and from Chicago to check this one out. But before we get to Pauno, before we get to the head coaching hire that you've just made, let's start a little bit further back. When you joined the Chicago Fire, you came from an interesting role at U.S. Soccer, one that I actually wanted to talk to you about for a long time, just for my own personal interest. Can you explain what you were doing there and why the Chicago Fire was a job that you said, you know what, I have to take this. This is something that I need to be doing.
Well, the U.S. Soccer role was very interesting and very rewarding, and I want to begin by reiterating some thanks that I had given previously to Jurgen Klinsmann in particular, but also to Sunil Gulati and Dan Flynn for having hired me and entrusted me in a role that was created, frankly, by Jurgen. There has been an identified need to help players with their with their professional life, but off the field. And that is age specific. So by way of example, you know, 16 and 17 year olds, the pressures of turning pro have gotten so much greater, and families need assistance in sifting through the business world of soccer, and whether that's understanding FIFA regulations or understanding NCAA rules that may jeopardize eligibility, there was a niche there to help families and players. Beyond that, there's also this understanding that players need to take control of their own careers. And I give Coach Klinsmann a lot of credit here for wanting to help players prepare their life and manage and design their own careers so that they wouldn't be subject to a lot of influences that can be around them, even if well-intended, but perhaps ending up problematically. And an example of that is, you know, I read an article when I had taken the job with U.S. Soccer that Tim Duncan had lost between 10 and 20 million in speculative investments made by his financial advisor. And the lesson there was not just to have a financial advisor, but to be intimately involved in the investments and to have a checks and balances. So the position was designed to help players off the field if they were youth or young professionals, to also help their families with off-the-field matters. And I think it's incredibly forward-thinking by U.S. Soccer. I know that they are looking to continue the work that I began. But ultimately, the unexpected opportunity to draw the fire was more along of what, no pun intended, burns inside of me, which is a very highly competitive nature.
So what was it about Chicago? I think a lot of people look at this club, especially with some recent results and recent down years, you could say, and wonder if it's a sleeping giant or if it was stagnating. When you looked at the Chicago Fire, what kind of potential did you see, and how did you pitch your vision to Andrew Hopman? What was that vision? Ali Curtis has a 300-page plan. I assume that you didn't go that route, but I have to imagine you had a pitch here, and obviously it was a good one.
Well, it was at least good enough to be given the opportunity and fortunate enough. What is there not to like about Chicago? You know, when I, over the years, would always think about opportunities, and even though I spent 15 years in the league office and I tried my best to serve that role well, inside of me is a real competitor, and at the league office, you have to harness that and suppress that, if you will. In Chicago, and in any job, what I look for is, with whom will I be working and for whom will I be working? Can I learn? Is it a positive environment? Is it a supportive environment? Do I like the people around me? And that is most important to me, because the reality is we actually tend to spend more time with the people with whom we work than even our own family. That's a sad state in some regards, but it's a truth, or at least it's a truth in my professional life. Secondly is, what is the work that you're doing? Does it have purpose? Does it have meaning? Does it satisfy you? Does it challenge you? Is it rewarding? And all those things came out yes in this position. And with a sports team, to me, you know, family, young family and all, is it an area that we see ourselves and would like to be? And so Chicago's a great city. It's a fantastic sports town with great sports fans that are, you know, critical but very supportive. They're very loyal. They want to love you. They want to urge you on in a positive way. And, you know, my first game technically in charge with the Fire was the last game of the season, and I was so impressed with the fans, even though I knew them from having been in the league so long, at how, even when we fell behind, they continued to try to rally and push the team. I think that's a special group. So in the end, the decision for me was easy. Great owner, great town, great opportunity. a team with rich history and tradition, which I think is important. And I said it on the day of my opening press conference, you know, I think the history of the league has shown only three great clubs so far, the Galaxy, DC United, and Chicago Fire. And so it's a real honor to have an opportunity to serve as a custodian for the Fire for however long I'm blessed with that chance.
What's your vision of what this looks like? What are you leading it towards? I think fans right now especially are looking at these four teams that are left in the MLS Cup playoffs and saying, okay, well, the on-field vision at least for the Red Bulls, and that includes an off-field one as well, for the Crew, for FC Dallas, for the Portland Timbers, are pretty clear. Have you honed in on that? And how did Veljko Paunović here, how did he fit into that? Why was he the right man for that job?
Well, yeah, I do have a vision for the club, and I have shared that with Andrew, but a lot of the vision was already there. You know, there's a proud group that's been working with Chicago Fire Soccer Club for a while, and you know, the commercial elements of the Fire have been growing every year, which is a credit to Atul Khosla and the entire staff. And there's a great spirit and energy among the office staff. And unfortunately, what's been lagging has been the results on the field. And I wasn't there, so I can't comment with certainty as to what may have gone on or what may have gone differently. What I can say is, for me, everything begins with people and making sure that we hire and are surrounded by good people, those that are values-driven, those that hold as respect and passion and accountability and competitiveness and humor as essential elements of their character. From there, from the people, it's about a purpose, and our purpose is clear. We need to win championships, we need to serve our community, and we must never forget that we are a business, so we need to try to earn profits. So the people and the purpose are clear. That makes the direction far easier. And with regards to Pano, what I felt was, frankly, a kinship. Someone who shares that purpose, is a pragmatic dreamer about what we can achieve and accomplish, and who has the energy, enthusiasm, and requisite skills to make it happen.
When did this start with Pano? And I know we've heard so many names, and I have to ask you about some of them. We heard Todd Ramos. We heard Pavel Pardo. We talked about that on this show, both those guys. Guillermo Barros-Schelotto was in the running. I heard Kerry Zavagnin had spoken to you. How much due diligence was done here? How many people did you talk to? How long did this process take, and when did Pano enter that conversation?
Well, with regards to the first question, Andrew, and Pano, he and I have been coming closer and friendlier, if you will, for the past 5 years, from the year before he actually joins Major League Soccer as his last year as a player. And that helped, because that there was a comfort and a familiarity between us that made our conversations very natural. The process that we set up was designed carefully, and we put a timeline against it, although we tried to make that a loose timeline, recognizing that some issues on timing are outside of your control. So, for example, if you wanted to speak to someone who is currently employed, I think it's proper to do so at that employee's convenience, and you don't always control the timing in those situations. But we had identified characteristics that we were seeking in our head coach. We had identified a pool of candidates, but also wanted to be open about other candidates that might come across our radar, and they did, that we had not initially thought of or considered or even dreamed would be interested, quite frankly. And we were determined to be disciplined in our process, such that we would not make a decision until we believed we had exhausted a representative sample of coaches with varying backgrounds varying experiences to enable us to make a decision that was a most informed one.
Can you confirm that, say, Guillermo Barros-Schelotto, that Todd Ramos, that Pavel Pardo were among that group? I think a lot of people are at least curious as to who was in the running here.
Andrew, I said very clearly from the onset that I thought, out of respect for the individuals themselves and out of respect for the process, that we would not look to comment on names. And though the process is completed, I still feel the same way. We can't control if an individual wants to share any information as to whether they were or were not part of the conversation or considered or interviewed or however else you want to look at it. But from our perspective, we want to respect those individuals' sense of privacy, and we're more interested in speaking about the gentleman that we hired who we think is special.
Let's talk about Pauno then. Of course, people will be familiar with him from the U-20 World Cup with Serbia. They won that competition. I believe they knocked off the U.S. in the course of that here. Tell me about his philosophy and how it meshes with yours, because I think what Fire fans are probably going to be most curious about is, what is the product on the field going to look like? What are the tenets that you've identified as important? We've heard in the last year from different hirings, hey, we want to be an aggressive, high-pressure style. We want to possess. We want to play this way or that way. Is there a philosophy that's going here? And is there maybe a way in which that the club is going to work on a larger level that you can apply? Say, if we're looking at the playoffs and Oscar Pereja in Dallas, where they really value youth and pulling that through the pipeline, what sort of specifics can you give Fire fans at this point?
What I can share is that what I like most about Pano's approach, and the one that syncs well with me, is this sense of being adaptable. Major League Soccer is a very difficult league, and it has characteristics that are unique to itself. No other league that I can think of plays across as wide of an expanse as the continental U.S. and our three Canadian brethren. It also has altitude and turf and four time zones and very, very differing climatic conditions, and ones that can go from, you know, we have a situation where our league is so big, we could be playing in 70, 75 degree weather in Los Angeles today, and, you know, 5 days from today, be playing in Chicago in late October and November and have it be literally freezing. I'm not sure that anyone any other league experiences that. And I think that requires an ability to be flexible and adaptable. And what I like about Pano, what I like about his approach, and what I really liked about his Serbian team was just that, was they were able to meet the demands of the game in any way. They won in a variety of different fashions and employing different systems, styles, whatever labels that people are more comfortable placing on them. And what I also liked was the resiliency of this group, something that I think can be coached and can be improved. You know, they lost their first game of the tournament, especially with a young team, that can be a crushing blow. Their last four games all went to extra time or penalty kicks. That requires a level of concentration, of commitment, of team unity, of strength, of discipline that I think is, again, those are coachable elements. And when we set out to find our coach, among the top of our list was the ability to coach, the ability to teach, understanding that players learn and people learn in different ways. And I am convinced that Pano has those abilities.
A lot of people out there talk about how tough it is for foreign coaches to be successful in this league. Now, one of the things being mentioned is that Pano played in MLS, but some people are saying one season 4 or 5 years ago. Does he really know the league? I mean, does he really know the league any different than a guy coming in out of the cold?
Yeah, well, it's understandable given the history of coaches in the league, the quote-unquote foreign coaches, that people would have that reaction. And there is a difference, however, between being unfamiliar with the league and familiar with the league. And I think that's where the application of a foreign label is a little bit misleading. You know, is Oscar Pereja foreign? Well, and he played in the league years and years and years ago. Now, understandably, he helped develop, design, and execute the launch of the FC Dallas Academy. And he's worked in the U.S. environment so that he's familiar with the cultural aspects of players in America and in Canada. I think Panos having played in the league is significant, and I think it's relevant. I don't think that the travel has changed that much in the 4 years, other than it's probably gotten greater. So the other part that I also understand fans would not be privy to are the conversations that we have had, the information that he has shared, the questions that we utilized during our interview process to vet his knowledge of the league, to, you know, make questions of teams beyond Chicago Fire, and, you know, his working knowledge of how teams play, their key players, guys who, you know, he has spoken to me about players that he's called, quote, interesting, who are reserves on other teams. So they don't play on a regular basis, yet he knew about them, and he gave characteristics about them, and he gave reasons why he would be interested in learning more about those players. So I think he has a unique blend, and I don't think that his being an international citizen or a non-domestic is as relevant as familiarity, and I believe he knows this league very well. And what he may be lacking, we need to compensate in the staff that we put around him. And, you know, he is very open and wants to include on his staff, you know, those who are more familiar with Major League Soccer. So I understand why people would express a concern. For sure, there's always an adjustment, as there are for players who come to a new league. But I'm very, very confident that it won't be an issue.
You mentioned staff there, and that leads us into our next question here, which I think a lot of people have been wondering. It seems like, as far as that experienced staff goes, a lot of guys leaving. It seemed like a pretty big clean-out when you're going down to even perhaps the kit man. Can you explain why that was necessary and maybe what the timeline and the strategy is for Pano now that he has his own staff to hire that perhaps even Brian Bliss, people are saying, won't be back post-Super Draft?
So, you know, with regard to changes, I have a view that anyone and everyone who touches the team contributes to the atmosphere and the environment for that team. And I thought it was appropriate to allow Pano to, with my input and with my support, create his own environment. And I think that he should have the right to select those people that he believes work best with him. And I believe that he and I are so aligned on values that we want to make sure that those that we bring in share those values as well. So I'll take it a step further. You know, it's my intention that whoever is brought on to be a part of this soccer staff in any capacity moving forward, their employment will be directly tied in to Panos. The idea there is very clear and very simple. We are all rowing in one direction, and that is the direction that the head coach sets his sights on. We have to all be unified in our intentions and in our work. And the only way that I know to do that is to ensure that we are all aligned in terms of our reward and our risk. So moving forward, everyone in our soccer unit will be connected in that way.
What does that mean for the current squad here? As we look forward and we look at 2016 and we try to look ahead and see what Paunovic and you in particular and the whole organization, as you say, will put on the field here. What's the core look like? Do you have players that you sit down and say, this guy, a Harry Shipp, a Matt Polster, maybe a Gilberto, a Jovan Jones, David Akam, these are our core. What should people expect on the playing side? Is it turnover? Is it more of the same as Pano continues to shape his squad?
Well, first, I think Pano has a real good grip of the players. One thing that he doesn't have and that he admits, and which is critically important, particularly given his teaching and coaching style, is he doesn't know them as men. And it's a lesson that I learned from Arrigo Sacchi back in 1994. I was blessed to have worked the World Cup, and I was really lucky to be introduced to him. And I asked him if he would mind if I asked him one question. And the question I asked him was, how did you select your team? And Sacchi said to me, first the man and then the player. And that has always stuck with me. And I use it now as one of my principles. And we will use it as part of our scouting and recruitment of players that we look to bring in. We need to know the people that we're bringing into our group, because everything begins with people. So Pano has a view of the players on the team. Unfortunately, he doesn't know them as men. He doesn't know their character. Brian, Logan Paws, and I have tried to shed some light on that, but we'll have to make some decisions at the onset with limited understanding in that regard. Moving forward, we'll obviously have a better feel for that with each individual. You know, in terms of turnover and the like, look, the fact is that a lot of teams have contacted me seeking many of our players. That tells me that we have value as it's perceived within Major League Soccer. And Pano clearly believes that the team underperformed against its talent last year. All successful MLS teams that have been able to sustain winning and sustain competing for MLS Cup or the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup have one thing in common, and that's a core of players that they're able to retain and build off of for several years. We need to settle on that core, expand on that core, and then grow the team from there. I think that we are in position to do that, but it's not complete yet.
What's your position, Nelson, on designated players, and in particular the thought out there that perhaps Chicago is a place or a club or a franchise that should be targeting big-name Mexican players? Do you have a thought on that as far as what you want to spend your money on and perhaps the idea of a Mexican designated player and an El Tri, a national team player?
I do. I have plenty of thoughts, Andrew. So the first is just on DPs in general. We have three designated players already. Pano likes all three. He believes that they can all contribute in meaningful ways, and so we'll work with our DPs as we have them. A general DP comment is: I believe that DPs should complete the puzzle, not start it. And so I believe that the key is having a sound foundation of players, and then your designated players should be the special difference makers that complete your team. And I look at the Galaxy. When they first brought over David Beckham, they were not ready for Beckham in any sense of the word. But Bruce Arena and his staff smartly started to put pieces together, drafting Omar Gonzalez, drafting A.J. De La Garza, reinvigorating Todd Donovan, going out and getting Juninho. You know, they had Landon. They got Jossy Sardis off homegrown. And then they added Robbie Keane and won back-to-back MLS Cups. It's not an accident in my mind. New England two seasons ago built a really solid core, identified a need, went out and got Jermaine Jones, and catapulted themselves to the MLS Cup last year. I think the DP needs to finish the puzzle, not start it. And with regard to the specific question on Mexican DPs, you know, I don't believe in pandering to an ethnic audience. I believe that all soccer fans appreciate good and or winning soccer. And, you know, as long as we are a good team and a winning team, it's not going to matter who's wearing the colors as long as those colors are being defended with pride and honor and the results are there. So, look, there are only, in my opinion, two needle movers in the world, and that's Messi and Ronaldo. Other than that, let's concentrate on making good soccer decisions. Let's get incrementally better until all of those little increments roll up into something more significant.
Now you're speaking of all these little increments, and I like the reference to the Galaxy there, and so I'm going to reference it with this question. They've really gone after it with their academy and their academy structure. You mentioned it. They've made a good number of homegrown signings that have been impactful on the field as well. They were one of the pioneers, if not the pioneer, with USL starting a LA Galaxy 2 team. As it relates to the Chicago Fire, what is your philosophy on the academy, signing homegrown players, and whether or not you need a USL club to compete and fill that gap from 18 to, say, 22? I know your U18s won a title this year. Chicago, known for talent, how do you make sure that that talent makes its way into the first team?
It's a fair question, and it's a multifaceted answer. First, Larry Sunderland, our academy director, has done a marvelous job in building the academy to what it is today. And obviously, we have a rich vein of talent within our geographic market, and we also do an excellent job, I think, of developing that talent. And the academy needs to be better integrated and a bigger part of our present as well as our future. As to how to get those players through the academy system into the first team, one piece of the puzzle is a head coach at the first team who is willing to play and further develop young talent. It's another reason why we selected Panovich. We think he is an excellent evaluator of talent and an excellent developer of talent. And the academy system within MLS is only going to become more robust and more powerful in terms of delivering players to the first team. And so having someone who knows how to handle and nurture young players, I think is critically important. And I think it's directly in the skill set and the strengths of Panovic. With regard to the USL team, on a macro level, for soccer in the United States, we need it. We need to round out our pyramid, if you will, and so it's essential. In terms of the Chicago Fire specifically, I need more time to analyze that situation. I know that there's a big rush to be Galaxy 2, Timbers 2, Sounders 2, and all the rest of it. I want to be a little bit more thoughtful to make sure that if and when we make that decision to do that, we're prepared for it, we're properly staffed and resourced for it. And so I'm going to ask for some patience to allow me to look at all options, look to create new options, analyze those, assess those before making a final decision.
Well, there you have it. USL in the future, not so sure, but we know Veljko Panovic is in the future for the Chicago Fire. Nelson Rodriguez with the hire this weekend. Nelson, we thank you so much for your time. It sounds like exciting times ahead at the Fire. Sounds like a lot to build, a lot to do in the coming months, and we'll check back with you, I'm sure, as that starts to happen. Happy Thanksgiving, though.
Andrew David, thank you guys very much for the time today. Happy Thanksgiving to all the fans. Peace and goodwill to all.
Thanks, Nelson. Big thanks to Nelson Rodriguez for joining us here on Extra Time Radio. There weren't a ton of specifics given. I got to be honest and upfront about that. We pushed him a little bit on some of them, and I don't think it's that those specifics don't exist. I think the way it sounds to me is that they're not ready to share those specifics to necessarily tie themselves into anything to create any expectations. Dave, any thoughts to make you bring your raggedy voice back into this conversation?
No, not really. I mean, I agree with you. Clearly, he has a vision. He has a plan. There's a reason he took this role. There's a reason he got it. He knows the league. I do understand that he's saying this is a coach who has a foreign view on the league, but also understands what it's like to live in the league every mm-hmm. day, which is an issue. But I do question how much he does know the talent pool, the styles of acquiring players. How much will he value things? Well, you know, it's always the question.
Who will the support staff be? We're not sure who the support staff will be. And it sounds like that they're going to let Velko almost completely remake, right, with Nelson's assistance and approval, of course, the technical side of this club. And that in itself, I think, will likely have some growing pains. I like their core. I like what they're doing in some places on the field. But as Matt said, there's some serious questions as far as what's going to happen on the back line and else other parts of the league. And you know the Eastern Conference is going to get stronger going into next year as well. Matt, if you're a Fire fan, you're looking at this offseason, you're looking to head into 2016, what would be the most pressing thing on your mind? What would you need reassurance about? What would you want to see from this new brain trust, so to speak, of the Chicago Fire?
I would want to see the USL team first and foremost. If you were giving me a choice between that and anything else, I would want to see that. But barring that, it has to be player acquisition. You have to nail that number one draft pick. I assume it'll be Josh Yarrow, the kid from Georgetown, who is he would have gone number one last year over Kyle Larin. So that's how highly he's rated as a central defender. But then they have to figure out probably a couple, two or three overseas signings. And then I just want to see a commitment to building the young players on this team and making them better. You know, is he going to work with Harry Shipp to understand how to better receive the ball in traffic? Is he going to work with Matt Polster to hone his instincts a little bit in terms of when to be aggressive and go and when to hold back and contain? The important little things that guys like Victor Ulloa and Kellen Acosta have get right over the last 2 years under Oscar Pereja, that has to be the formula that Ponovic uses.
We will see what happens with Chicago Fire. Chicago Fire fans, let us know what you think. We've got a bunch of swag, like I said. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this interview and what you would like to see this offseason. We'll talk about those in future episodes of Extra Time Radio. Make sure you also check out our special with Mike LaHood, Philadelphia Union midfielder. Mike LaHood, he talks about all sorts of different things, the little details that make up life in MLS for, let's call him a middle-class player. I think Mike would agree with that assessment. What needs to happen in U.S. soccer on the academy side? What's going on in Africa with Ebola and his efforts to help eradicate that? That's good news there. I think you'll enjoy that, as well as Schools for Salone. There's some big news with the charity he and Kai Kamara are part of pushing toward the forefront and pushing ahead. So make sure you listen to that. Also, Thanksgiving edition, Nat Borchers, Zach Lloyd, complete Audi MLS Cup playoff preview. That's all we have here on this special edition. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, everyone.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.